For joining us. I'm going to provide a brief intro and some context setting because there's some folks on this a lot that probably haven't heard what we're about. And also what I will go through will kind of set the framework of the questions that I'm going to ask my compatriots on the webinar, which I'll introduce in a few minutes. But let me just start at the outset that what Health Rosetta is all about is empowering community-owned health plans. And we define community broadly. It can be an employer community, it could be a union a community, could be a place-based. And the key is really taking ownership of it. And we talk a lot about relocalizing health in our movement because health is about as local as it gets. You know, what's more local than an interaction between a doctor and a patient? And so for the most part, what we like to talk about is where we're going, what are the things working, but it is notable to contrast with the status quo, which is really, you flip the words that I had on the head. What we have in the status quo is really disempowering Wall Street rented sick care plans. They're just not getting the job done. We know that we're already spending more than enough money to not only fund world-class healthcare, but also what drives 80% of health outcomes, which you see a very high-level summary here. What actually drives health outcomes? Turns out, the clinical care is only 10 to 20% of that. And having a good-paying job, clean air, clean water, safe neighborhoods, education, these are the sort of things that actually drive health outcomes. And it's really our mission is to basically repatriate that money that's being squandered. I often say that healthcare isn't expensive. After all, the clinicians are only getting 27 cents of every dollar that we ostensibly spend on healthcare. Docs, just about 8 cents of that. What's expensive is what we have now and where we spend money. Inappropriately, inappropriate treatment, profiteering, price gouging, administrative bloat, fraud. These are the things that are expensive. So what you're going to hear about today is an example from Matheny Motors of how they get rid of the gunk, that's not helping anybody except Wall Street, and really focus in on who matters, the member, the employee. And so we're going to walk through this local framework. You'll see this on the back cover of Relocalizing Health, which you can download, via this link here. And so we'll go through these five steps that spell out local. The important thing to note is four of these five steps are either invisible to the member or only a clear positive. And so sometimes people are scared about making change or say it's disruptive. And sometimes I get introduced as a disruptor and I take issue with that. Like, we're restoring sanity and we're restoring humanity and we're restoring the American dream. What's disruptive is a status quo. And so the first piece of this is learning how to be liberated from the status quo. And so let's go ahead and jump into that and I'll go through the rest of the letters as we go through this framework. So the old way is, try to come up with some grand new plan and it takes a long time and hopefully there's a payoff. Unfortunately, there's often not that payoff. And again, time is on the horizontal axis, benefit is on the vertical axis. So the first step is learning how to be liberated from the status quo. This is just the mindset shift. A lot of people have been trained to believe healthcare is not fixable. They think it's like Middle East peace, like they'd like that solved too, but seems impossible and out of their control. And the industry, of course, wants you to think that. And what you're going to hear today is a great example of a leadership team that left behind the status quo thinking and took ownership. The logos I have throughout, we're not going to go through all these case studies, but these are case studies either in my books or on our website. There's tons of examples. We haven't found a setting this doesn't work. Rural, urban, public companies, private organizations, public sector organizations, private companies, rural, urban, small, large, you name it. We have countless examples. And so it starts with mindset shift. So you get a little benefit there. But then that sets the stage for O, which is optimized plan infrastructure. This is kind of the, might call it the boring underpinnings, like how your claims are processed, how you pay your benefits advisor. We publish on our site a advisor code of conduct, a plan sponsor bill of rights, an advisor compensation disclosure. There's a bit of savings here, but really it's what this unlocks. This is sort of like the master key that unlocks the door to the big savings. Having said that, you have an organization like Copper State that without changing anything, like in the rest of the local that I'll spell out, just getting rid of junk fees and watching claims and stuff like that, they saved $1,000 per employee per year. So there's savings to be had there. So then you do get some savings. And then probably the lowest hanging fruit there is, because there's so many shenanigans with the mega pharmacy benefit managers, these PBMs, is carving that out. There is extreme profiteering going on there. You don't necessarily have to change where people get their medications or even the formulary to get tremendous savings. We'll see within the pharmacy spend 30 to 50% savings, which is overall about 5 to 10% of the savings. Just to give you one example, Caterpillar in the private sector, Caterpillar, really the only thing they focused in on is their pharmacy procurement. And they've been extremely diligent there. They haven't seen overall healthcare spending for their organization go up in a decade. That's how much savings there is to be had there. State of New Jersey in the first 3 years saved $1.6 billion by getting the pharmacy procurement under control. So that's the next step. And then the first thing that really people can notice, but it's clearly a positive and a value add, is proper primary care. There's no well-functioning healthcare system in the world not built on proper primary care. You know, in my last book, I mentioned primary care over 150 times. And so these are organizations like Rosen Hotels that was focused of my TED talk. These are all organizations that are saving tremendous sums. I mean, they're spending half of what a typical employer spends because they've been doing it so long. And Gasparilla Inn and Bennett School Districts, same type of thing. Kind of like the infrastructure, there's some direct savings here by like keeping people out of the ER for non-emergencies, but this also unlocks savings. I say, you know, that you can't price gouge a surprise bill on a surgery that never happened or ER visit that never happened, and many of them are not necessary. So that's the next step in the process. And then the final step is really, we're going to talk some about this during today's webinar. This is leaving behind value extracting networks. And so this is where in the hands of a professional like Bryce and his team, this can be managed well. Doesn't have to be disruptive, but if you don't do it right, you can have issues here. And so you really have to be thoughtful about it. You know, an organization like Pacific Steel, they went from spending for their 750 employees over $8 million on health benefits 4 years ago. They're now spending under $3.5 million. Probably three quarters of that savings was doing direct contracts and getting really diligent. Even though they had people in 40 different locations in 9 states, they did it. So absolutely possible. And you see there's all this incremental realized benefit when you take this approach. And so that's what we really recommend. You don't have to go in this order. It's a logical flow, but people, given the challenges and the organization culture, they'll take different approaches, but that's just a way to move through it. So with that, want to get into the core of the webinar. And so we're going to hear from Tim Matheny, who's the owner, fourth generation. Matheny Motors has been around nearly 100 years. I believe Tim mentioned next year will be their 100th anniversary. And sadly, healthcare has been jeopardizing some long-held family businesses. And one of the things that we love are organizations like Tim's that are this kind of mid-market, the sort of 50 to 5,000 employees. They really care about their employees. Naturally, they care about their business. And they're kind of saying enough is enough. And we're going to also hear from Matt Martin, who's the HR director, you know, making things happen from inside. And then Bryce Heinbaugh is the Health Rosetta advisor that's been working with Tim and Matt in the organization. And it's interesting, through this journey, he brought on board Faith, who is an RN, and they're doing some really smart things there. And she's a tremendous advocate. So we're going to hear some about that. So I'm going to stop sharing my screen here for a bit. And let's go ahead and jump in with some questions. Hang on a second here. Just going to pull something up. So maybe just as some background, if you all can kind of give me a little overview of the company, the size of the plan, number of employees and lives on it, and give me a little bit of the history of what it, you know, what had been in place before, and, you know, had there been any rate increases, you know, say over the last 5 to 10 years, and let's just start there, kind of as a little level set for where things are at. So take it away, whoever wants to grab that.
I can start real quick, and then I'll let Matt and Bryce talk. So we, you know, we have about 350 employees, and we're in 5 states. We have car and truck dealerships, and probably the primary business is commercial trucks, long haul tractors. We're a Freightliner dealership, and then we sell fire trucks up and down the East Coast, and also heavy towing equipment. But we were faced with as a Blue Cross captive over the years. Probably four years ago and 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 20 and 30% increases in our health insurance each year. And even the last year before we switched over to Bryce and his team, you know, I think we probably had we're looking at a 40% increase. So when I was trying to attract employees, whether it's entry level or the highly skilled technicians, we have probably 120 technicians in our group. We were just at an uncompetitive disadvantage. We found ourselves, we want to hire this guy, but the health insurance, you know, versus my local dealer in that market, we were just extremely high, and it always came back to health insurance. So as we made this move, Matt can get into some specifics, each year we've been able the last couple of years to decrease it, and it's just been a win-win. And a side note, you know, whether it's Faith or Bryce and being at our locations and the relationships my employee family has made with both Bryce and Faith, they're really part of our family and part of our team, and are very trusted. And they'll tell some good stories of where we've had some great outcomes on quality of care and how that's, you know, just permeated through our different dealerships, the quality of healthcare we've received. And obviously at a reduced premium price to our employees. So anyway, I'll let Matt take it from there, and he can give you some specifics.
So Matt, with those 20, 30% increases, were they sending out limos to employees to take them? And what justified those increases?
We were told there were some high claims, really weren't provided a whole lot of information on that. Really, we're stuck waiting until the end of the year to figure out what that increase was going to be, and just waiting, knowing it was going to be an increase. Have about 170 employees on the plan, almost 300 lives. So a lot of, you know, important stuff that goes on each year, and really just felt like we were stuck in that status quo. Didn't really feel like we had an option other than to take the increase, figure out what we were going to take on as a company, and figure out what we had to pass on to the employees, and knowing that it was already a challenge for employees to pay for those health insurance costs.
How did you find out there was another option available to you?
So Tim actually sent me a automotive news article that Bryce and yourself were featured on. So I took the ball, ran with it, actually emailed you, Dave, and you got me in contact with Bryce, started reading the CEO's Guide to Restoring Healthcare, Restoring the American Dream. And I was completely shocked. I really was. You know, I've been in HR for 8 years, really just expected the status quo, expected, you know, we're going to get an increase. It was going to be through a fully insured plan. And just the amount of detail that was in that book of the what we could do to change our health plan to make it not only better for the company, but better for our employees and better for their spouses and their children.
Yep. Bryce, you want to add anything in terms of the kind of, as you receive the email and
yeah.
you know, look, dug in, what did you find?
Well, again, I'll say this, you know, to hear Matt on the phone the first time we spoke that, you know, we had a fully insured healthcare plan, and you know, going into 2019, they had delivered a 30% non-negotiable increase to our employees and their families, and you know, non-negotiable 30% increase on a couple of million dollars. That's a big number. And for a family-owned business like Matheny Motors, it takes your breath away to think, wow, and they just had to absorb it, right? And how do they do that? Does Tim, you know, just eat into his bottom line on it? Does he pass it on to employees? And so that started the conversation. And, you know, we took on, you know, this is the tough part about moving a fully insured organization as Matheny Motors was to self-insured. It's a difficult task. It's difficult because the Buca insurance company doesn't want to release data, doesn't want to really give you their, you know, the secret sauce per se. And so we had, we actually had to collect employee health questionnaires, by the way, in the fourth quarter, and then go to stop loss markets to find a stop loss carrier that even had time to review the health questionnaires. And we had no previous actual data, no pharmacy data, no medical spend data, nothing. And thankfully, you know, again, we found at least one stop loss carrier, and really it was just one that would even give us the time of day. But when we explained that this was going to be a full-on health Rosetta model, every tenant of the Rosetta model other than the direct primary care was going to be installed and launched, this stop-loss carrier said, okay, we can come to the table. And so that began what I would say would be a really tough 30 to 45 days in the fourth quarter of 2019 to make it all happen. And so that kind of lays the groundwork.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, in that stepwise process, I mean, you understandably, you took more of the rip off the Band-Aid, right, and do a lot right away, you know, which it's risk reward on that. So it'd be interesting to maybe describe a little bit about, you know, some of the challenges in the early days. You know, like anything, you know, great in life, there's usually a lot of hard work and some, you know, potholes and, you know, maybe you're in a ditch here and there. What were some of the difficult parts besides obviously getting the stop loss coverage and the questionnaires, which is all significant work. And just as a sidebar, it's gotten a little bit easier since then that we've, in Health Rosetta, we've worked with an organization that has an approach that can work around the questionnaire thing. What a lot of organizations do will, they might start with a level funded program where they start to get some of the data and kind of step into it that way. But, you know, we're all for it. People want to be aggressive and just be thoughtful about it. But maybe talk a little bit about some of the hiccups and stumbles along the way early on.
Sure. Go ahead, Matt. Yeah, I would say that one challenge that we had early on was just around employee education. You know, we're across, you know, a lot of the East Coast with our operations. And, you know, I had one case where we had an employee in Florida that, you know, I don't know if they attended the webinar that we had to have because we couldn't make it out to their location. But she was struggling with a foot issue and really needed some help. And Faith was able to connect with her. Help her start to understand, but she needed a little bit more coaching. So I was able to get on a call. Bryce was able to get on a call. We really provided her all the educational pieces that we knew we needed to get her to understand that she needed to make a change within her healthcare to make sure we were doing the right things going forward for her care and the quality of her care.
Yeah, this actually reminds me a little less than a year ago, we had Bryce at our actually last in-person summit just before COVID kicked up, kind of do a simulation of, in fact, if anybody wants to see the simulation of the employee education session, let us know. We got that on video. But one of the questions that, you know, normally get, we'll jump into the questions at the end, but it kind of relates here and to what Matt was saying and particular member experience. So maybe Bryce, if you can speak to a little bit, how you overcome, like there's going to be of course the status quo will want to say, or even somebody may logically think, gosh, if I'm paying, you know, less, you know, it's the company's trying to screw me, or, you know, it couldn't possibly be better if it's less. And it doesn't have this fancy national logo. What's going on here? Am I going to be left twisting in the wind? How do you overcome that? I mean, that's understandable. You know, when you've had 10, 20 years of every year open enrollment means pay more, get less. That's not exactly a foundation of trust that is pre-existing on this topic. So maybe talk a little bit about how you go through the member education and kind of what you did in that time frame. I remember talking to you a little bit during that time frame, and you were thankfully you already didn't have hair on the top of your head. You probably would have lost some hair during that time. Because it sounded like a pretty stressful time, but also exciting. And as I recall, there was a pretty tense exchange at one of the moments in that education session.
Yeah, sure. So again, Dave, we've talked about it, and you know, change management is a really big part of this, right? You know, it's the mindset shift that has to happen. You know, I can talk to Tim Matheny and Matt Martin in a conference room in Parkersburg, West Virginia, and these guys, okay, they get it. They're paying the bills. They see it. But when it comes to the mindset change of nearly 200 employees and their families about what has been going on in healthcare and how they've been financially affected by it, I said to Matt, you know, in the fourth quarter of 2019, I said, Matt, we've got to come see every one of these people, however we can get to the most of them. And Faith Barron and I, Faith and our account manager, we hopped in, you know, filled up a Yukon with material to pass out, and we drove. We did 5 states in 4 days to see every one of their locations that we could, and that personal face-to-face, those meetings. I don't even like to call them open enrollment meetings. I like to call them educational and mindset shift meetings. I mean, that's how important they are for us. So, Dave, is you've had in a couple of your books, you know, you start off a few of the chapters with, there's a Bloomberg diagram of the past 40 years in America. And it says that, you know, people really aren't making much more money net take home than they did 40 years ago. I use it every time. And I also show the Wall Street Journal diagram about personal household budgets from 07 to 14, and how healthcare had gone up 24.9%, and every other major staple of the household budget has had to be cut to afford the out-of-pocket increase on the healthcare. And so we start to gain emotional intelligence at each one of these meetings. And when you have a clinician with you, Faith is right there with me by my side. Sometimes if we're doing it with a physician, a direct primary care doc, I ask the physician to be right there with us as well. And so we really seek the minds and hearts of these people to let them realize and see what's really happening. And having a, you know, $5,000, $10,000 deductible to someone that's, you know, making $15 to $25 an hour, that's not insurance. To them, it's, my goodness, I'm still crossing my fingers. I don't want to have to go to the doctor because I can't afford it. So when we engaged, you know, we go through all of that, but what we then do is say, listen, your employer has hired us, and we're here to do really one thing. Our goal, and with the clinical team, is to achieve better patient outcomes for you and your families. And if you listen to what we're saying, we're going to be able to do that for you. And accept that this is a change, but we're changing to, you know, an employer built plan, not insurance company designed, employer built. And we're going to, in this case, Matt, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we canceled your $5,000, $10,000 deductible. We brought that down and then started basically the nurse navigator program and said, if you call to the nurse, she's going to help you, guide you to high quality outcomes, and you don't pay that deductible at all. We're going to waive the deductible. And you start, you know, everyone's pretty attentive by the time you get to that point. And I think, Matt, you know, I'd like to hear from you, Matt, you know, when you first did those rounds with us, you know, I think you could probably share a little bit of the responses that we were getting.
Yeah, it was great. It was really just a breath of fresh air for our employees, because they had been in a healthcare plan that was just not rewarding for them. They, you know, just went wherever they, you know, felt they should go, and were getting charged whatever the provider thought they should be charged, and just wasn't a great model. I was hearing a lot of stories where it was after the fact. I wasn't, you know, even knew anything about the cases, but, you know, really found that, you know, employees were really struggling with the healthcare plan that we were on. So it really, it was tough for me because I couldn't do anything about it. There was nothing, you know, reach out to our previous benefits advisor, and really there was nothing they could do for us.
I want to add here, because I'm going to ask Faith to chat on this as well, because she's been a part of it, and I think credit is due to her as well. But, you know, during COVID, we decided to go back in November to see all of these people. And I asked Faith, I said, I don't want you to feel uncomfortable doing this, but I think we need to go back. We've got to go to West Virginia and Virginia, and we've got to see these people. You've had an incredible year with them. You got to know them. But, you know, Faith, if you want to share just the embrace that you received when they saw you again in all these places. So.
Yes. Hello, everyone. So I've been working with Matheny for about 13 months now. And in the last 13 months, I've had over 250 interactions with employees. And they're definitely an awesome group. I love working with them. And the personal touch and being able to see them at enrollment meetings and just meet with them, you know, many, many came up to me and, you know, had it not been COVID, they were like, I would like to hug you right now because you just helped me so much through the course of whatever it be, whether it be a cancer diagnosis or I just need help finding a doctor. I really am able to work with everyone to prevent inappropriate treatment. If they call me, you know, we can prevent some big bad things. We prevented chemotherapy on someone who was told they were needing chemotherapy, and we didn't have to do that, the second opinion. Finding high quality doctors and keeping infection scores low, hospital risk low, all that kind of stuff makes a huge difference, and it develops a relationship. I have people, you know, friending me on Facebook, and they text me and, you know, Merry Christmas. And, you know, just it is a great opportunity, but then the word gets out and then more and more employees come to see what's happening and how we really want to get them the high quality, best care that we can.
Great. Bryce, I think this was the scenario, but so correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember some story when you were at one of the member education where there was a guy, I think it was like kind of one of these sort of body language type of things that wasn't too excited maybe about what he was hearing initially. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, sure. You know, we run into these cases, and some folks really just want to put their foot down about the change. And, you know, I'll say this, very white glove. You know, I don't really try to be too candid at that, you know, at those junctures. We try to embrace them. And in this case, you know, it's really talking through the situation. It's being able to make sense to them. And you know, one way or another, they're you know, this guy had been, you know, either touched or affected by healthcare in one way or another. And it's just talking about all of the great things that are coming. And by the way, we're lowering your health insurance premiums. Your paychecks are going up, you know, and that's hard to argue. And so we do recognize, you know, that not everyone is going to kind of listen to this gospel, right? And you're going to have people push back. But once they experience it, you know, as Faith said, she makes some really great long-term relationships. If it's someone going through a major, you know, if it's cardiac or cancer or a knee or a hip, you know, we're going to get them to the high quality doctor and the outcome, and we're going to take care of them all the way through. So that speaks volumes. Yeah.
Great. Why don't we, I think we've been speaking some of the change management, which is actually the biggest chapter in my last book for that reason, because you can have a really well-designed program, but if it's not rolled out well and there's not good communication and buy-in from leadership and all of that, and then continuous effort, it can still not go that well. But why don't we hit on a few of the nuts and bolts of the plan in terms of what's behind it. You know, we talked a little bit about the optimized plan infrastructure. Bryce, can you speak to what changed in terms of, you know, we know that we moved from a fully insured carrier controlled plan to a self-insured plan. But what were some of the things and maybe the way the benefits advisor was compensated? Can you speak a little bit about kind of the underpinnings, and then we'll get into the care side?
Sure. A couple of the changes that, again, I know that Matt and Tim were probably taken back a bit that first day we met in Parkersburg. And I said, listen, a part of, you know, my agreement under the Health Rosetta umbrella is that every dollar is disclosed. Everything that I can disclose to you, both direct and indirect, you're going to know where your money's going. And any dollars that really would come back to myself or my firm stated right here on this document. And so the elimination of any of the misaligned incentives that may have been in the past with your Blue Cross and Blue Shield or Cigna plan, you know, that's not here. Well, I'm not looking to win a bonus trip to the Cayman Islands on behalf of the insurance company or, you know, big overrides. That's not the case. And so I'm here to try to save you guys financially as well as drive those outcomes. And so, you know, it started with that conversation. And I think when we got to the point where I said to Tim and Matt, I said, listen, I really want you to embrace this Concierge Nurse Navigator program so much that I want you to be willing to waive the entire deductible. If your members engage us prior to an inpatient or outpatient procedure, imaging, whatever, I want you to be understanding that I think that on the financial side, we can greater affect what's being spent on healthcare if we can almost guarantee the high quality provider that member is going to. And so I think, you know, Matt, you and I had this conversation. Well, you know, how can you do that? And, you know, we talk about, well, again, lowering readmission rates and keeping away from high infection rate providers. Infections, misdiagnosis, patient safety, lower mortality. So those are things that we focus on. And so if we can do that, then just as you said, Dave, earlier, you know, we avoid an unnecessary or unneeded surgery or a readmission, then we're saving even more dollars. And in the fee for service, that misaligned fee for service model doesn't necessarily exist the way that, you know, if we can get to a center of excellence. And that's one big stepping stone that I think that Tim and Matt, you know, they were going from a $5,000, $10,000 deductible to waiving the deductible entirely on our two plans that we offer. That was a big deal. And then I'll stop there. But we do want to talk about how we did carve out the pharmacy benefit manager. We'll get to that. But Matt, do you want to add anything about
that? Yeah, I'm curious on both. Yeah, Matt, yeah. Tim, like, I mean, that almost sounds too good to be true. Like, how did that go over when Bryce suggested that?
Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, I think it went, I mean, it was kind of you know, it didn't make a whole lot of sense at first, but once we got into it, really saw what it did for our quality outcomes for our employees and what it's continuing to do for our employees, it was a no-brainer. It really was. It makes sense. But Bryce had mentioned earlier that we had, you know, had that $5,000 deductible plan. We actually lowered those deductibles, $2,500 and $4,000, and we able to bring one of those back that we had previously. It was too much of a cost. And then to tell employees, hey, on top of that, you don't even have to pay this deductible if you follow Faith's guidance on the best care that you can receive.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, one of the things the industry's done a great job of is making healthcare incredibly complex so that it gets people to kind of just throw up the white flag. But one thing, you know, as Bryce did this simulation at our event, it was straightforward. You know, really anybody could understand what Bryce was going through, and people understand zero. And as long as they understand why it is that you can waive deductibles and why the company would do that, because it's, you know, again, on their end, it could sound sort of odd after what they've been getting. So it's great that you were able to do that. And one of the things Bryce mentioned will segue into the pharmacy area. That's what we found on the compensation disclosure front. We found up to 17 undisclosed revenue streams that the employer had no idea about. And pharmacy is one of those areas that it's particularly bad. And so maybe talk a little bit about what happened on the pharmacy side, what you did with PBM, did the formulary change, and where they get medications change, and what were some of the results there?
Sure. I'll start with it, but I'm going to turn it to Faith here in a minute, because I think she, just the fact that she's on the front lines with this. But so we did, we moved to an entirely transparent and as vetted as we could find a pharmacy benefit manager. In the case for Matheny Motors, we moved to Southern Scripps, and we worked through. Again, we had onboarding calls with Matt on the line and our team and the nurses on the team on the line, but going through how we were going to write the formulary and what it was that, you know, all class of drugs and making sure that, you know, everything was at least fair and equitable to those who needed certain drugs, but also we also really just tried to make sure that you know, the members were paying the least amount of money, but also the plan, you know, removing misaligned incentives of the PBM. We also at that same time decided to move forward with waiving the costs related to diabetic supplies and durable medical equipment. And so Faith, if you just, you know, I know Faith, you've had a lot with the high cost specialty meds, you've experienced some members there, but you know, Tell us what that's like, maybe Faith, when someone calls in and you're there to help with the PBM or diabetic.
So we do exclude specialty drugs for most of our employers. And I work with JP Farley and we source that medication, whether it be through you know, a pharmacy manufacturer or whoever we can get help with. It's a very frequent contact with the employee and just filling out forms, doing what we can to get that done. We've saved some major money. Had a win this year with like a med that was $750,000, and we sourced it for nothing for the employer and the patient. So that's an incredible feeling for the employee to know that they can get the med they need for a serious diagnosis. I work closely with the PBM. We have weekly meetings and discuss any issues that have come up. Any disruptions that happen are told to me pretty quickly, and I get right on them. If the employee hasn't already called me, the PBM calls, and we deal with any issues that happen right away. So the employee rarely do they have to call the PBM themselves and deal with hold lines or anything like that. They just call me, and I am a good middle person for them and help them get their problem solved.
Great. I'm just going to expand a little bit on the medication thing. There's a lot of employers aren't aware of something that was in the Medicare Modernization Act, I think early in the 2000s, which was in general, a giant giveaway to the pharmaceutical industry. That's where essentially the government agreed to not negotiate on drug prices. However, there was a good facet of that bill, which is what they're talking about, where essentially they're called patient access programs, where for very high cost medications, which are most of the specialty drugs, there's basically a scale based on income on what gets paid. And because these medications are so expensive, like you can have a relatively high income, you know, maybe not over, you know, six figures, but 70, 80,000 and still get a significant break, if not free, on these medications. And so you got to have the right advisory team that's aware of these programs and plugs in the right vendors to work those angles. But there's some really terrific programs. There's actually a similar thing on the hospital side, where a lot of hospitals, particularly the tax exempt hospitals, they have basically financial assistance programs, and they're often not doing what they're supposed to do in terms of making patients aware of those things. And so there are ways to avoid some of these just incredibly absurd pricing that you'll hear about. And so that's a little bit what's going on there. It was one on the last sort of nuts and bolts, and then we'll get into, I'm gonna give a little overview on the employer program, then we'll get into Q&A, but maybe just talk about, obviously, medical claims are the biggest part of a plan. We've talked about getting to high quality care, avoiding unnecessary and inappropriate care. But of course, there's many cases where you do need care. And we see that oftentimes these PPO networks, as I wrote about in the book, are charging 5 and 10, even 20 times Medicare rates. I mean, it's just kind of beyond belief. And so, of course, you want to avoid that. So how are you avoiding that in this situation?
Yeah, so I can speak to it. So direct contracts with some providers. One of the high cost medical expenses is musculoskeletal, and so knees, hips, spine, shoulders, even. In the tri-state area, we have a provider that is really they excel in musculoskeletal outcomes for our members and plans that we represent. So Matheny Motors has an opportunity to really similar, Dave, to the surgery center at Oklahoma, you know, and having fair, reasonable priced procedures. And one of the things that we're very comfortable with on again, the quality of it is not knowing if that person really needs a surgery or not, but having that person come back and say, hey, you know what, the surgery is unneeded. They injections or some physical therapy, and we can avoid that surgery. So that again, goes into any aspect of a healthcare plan, whether, again, it may be musculoskeletal, but it could be, diabetes or other things, just making sure that they're getting the best advice and care. And a lot of times care teams will give those answers to them. I think too, Faith and our team, we really get to know the markets in which, like, Matheny is located, throughout the state of West Virginia and Virginia and even outside of DC, but you start to learn the doctors and hospitals, providers in those markets that will accept a fair and reasonable reimbursement. Again, we did terminate the network here, and that is a tremendous savings when you're not having the overpriced or, profiteering of a hospital, large invoices that a discount gives and you're supposed to feel good about. We have a Medicare reimbursement rate that is fair. Most providers in this area, they'll take it. And if not, we learn that of those that do not, and we still have the opportunity at high quality through either our Center of Excellence program. I may have mentioned before, we use Edison. And if we've got to get a member to a high cost place, for a big procedure, we've got a bundled contracted rate at one of those places. So it's not that we fear providers in one area saying no to us, we'll use the COE program and get the care that they need.
Yeah, I mean, you touch on the centers of excellence, and it's really key. And in my books, I talk about those and how it's pretty stunning the level of misdiagnosis in these different areas. It's 20% cancer, it's 67% musculoskeletal. Talk about the Starbucks study they did with Virginia Mason. They found that 90% of the spinal procedures they were doing would have been more effective with physical therapy. Given this is a nationwide issue, but it's particularly a scourge in West Virginia, is it's notable that kind of a microcosm of the dysfunction of our healthcare system is lower back pain, second most common reason people go to the doctor. It's a number one driver of disability. It's a number one driver of opioid prescriptions, even though there's zero evidence that opioids are effective for lower back pain other than short-term masking of pain while the underlying issue persists. And so that's a big part of get people appropriate care. And those issues are almost always solvable without serious narcotics or surgery. And so as we wrap up here, Tim, Matt, do you have any kind of parting shots of advice that you would give to other employers through this journey? You know, if there was just one or two things you'd emphasize.
Yeah, I have one. So just basically, know that there's a better way to provide benefits to your employees. It's going to take some effort. It's going to take some long phone calls, but the employee outcomes that you're going to receive are going to be well worth it. The cost savings and then the quality care are just astounding. It really is. It's hard to put into words.
And I'll add real quick, just, as the owner, a lot of these issues, whether it's management meetings or employee group meetings, health insurance was always just a problem. It was a cost. It was number one topic. And in the last 18 months, it's not even in the top 10 in our organization now. I have happy employees. Their paychecks have increased year over year the last 2 years. And the good outcomes have really, there's just a positive attitude about it. So from going from where we were 3 years ago to today, it's a home run for Matheny Motors.
Great. Thanks so much for sharing that. Before we hop into the Q&A, I'm just going to go through a little introduction of our employer program for employers who want to learn more. We've put together a program particularly if they're not ready to go right away or they just want to become a more informed buyer. And really this applies across the board. It's definitely easier when you're over 50 employees, and that's really what the employer program is kind of geared towards that. Having said that, we're a tiny employer ourselves, less than 10 people. We can't do exactly the same things, but largely we follow the same blueprint here. Instead of stop loss, we have a very high deductible plan that kind of acts as our stop loss. We've only had one time we've actually had to tap into that insurance. We self-insure for pretty much everything else. And so these models can apply. You just have to apply slightly different tactics. So we put together this employer program to just give people a feel for what's going on, how they can be more informed. We have these employer roundtables. It's kind of modeled after what we've done on the advisor side, this peer-to-peer sharing. And then we have regular office hours. We have tools and education that we give folks, and basically case study library, sample contracts, all these types of things to just basically be a resource as people start on this journey. If they're ready to jump and go right away, fantastic. That's what Matheny Motors did. And that's what Bryce is helping and Faith are helping employers with every day. So that's kind of the very high level overview. When we send the follow-up to the webinar, we'll have a link to more details on it. It's really geared towards decision makers, people who are actively engaged. It's $99 a month. No long-term commitments. You want to do it for 3 months and get in, get out, that's fine. And that's, you know, we're just trying to make another resource available for folks. And you can go to healthrosetta.org/employers for more information on that. And so with that, I'm going to segue into the Q&A. Let me pull that up. And some of what was asked gets addressed in the employer program. You know, there was a question around size of employer. As I said, if you're over 50, you have a lot of leeway on what you can do. You know, some people think you have to have 250 or 1,000 or 5,000 employees to be self-insured. That's not the case. I mean, really, you still have insurance. It's called stop-loss insurance. And really, in terms of actually true insurance, about 15-20% of the cost of a plan is true insurance, these shock claims, the cancers, complex things. The other items are budgetable. Like, you know, you're going to have a certain number of surgeries and MRIs and primary care visits, you know, all that. That's budgetable. That's not insurance. Unless you like paying a 40% insurance bureaucracy tax, there's no reason to, you know, have that approach. And so there's definitely tools. That's a lot of what our advisor program is about, is sharing this knowledge of how to do that for folks. And there's a question around in that transition, when Bryce, you came on board, and Tim and Matt, as you hired Bryce, did Bryce take over the Blue Cross plan, or was it just kind of the cutover? How did that process work?
We kicked Blue Cross out the door, I guess, is the best way to put it.
And so Bryce, so Bryce, you didn't have, because some folks will, you know, you've obviously worked with a lot of plans from traditional carriers, so you have that capability. So in this case, you just started working on the new as you came in?
Yeah, because we had actually been in a time crunch. We wanted to avoid the kabuki dance. You know, they started off with a good increase coming into 2020, and we wanted to avoid it. And so in that case, yeah, we fired them and we just started right away self-funded with my firm. A lot of times, though, I will speak, Dave, to that question. You know, a lot of times it takes time. So, you know, we did a public school district here in 2020. We had taken over, we had asked for the consultant of record with the Buca carrier, and we slowly took our time seeing the data and understanding the data being calculated when we make the change. And that process, I think, actually took nearly 9 months to make the change. So it just depends on, can we get data or not? And if we can't get data, then for me, I don't care to have broker of record or anything like that. We just make the change.
Yeah. So there's been a number of questions related to different vendors like TPAs and whatnot. We're not going to get into the specific vendors for one. There's a bunch of different questions in that. But the core reason is we track about 2,300 different vendors. There's probably 50 or 100 that have been used successfully with advisors in our program. But the only ones that we sort of endorse are ones where they've gone through a very deep vetting process where there's, you know, we've shadowed implementations, they've got standard contracts, they've got standard terms, they've got dedicated teams to these type of plans. They have standardized data sharing agreements, all these things that, and even there's not like just one TPA that's a fit for every situation, for example, and that's true. It's really about applying the right vendor to the right situation. And you know, candidly, some vendors have shelf lives. So somebody who, you know, might be great last year may have lost their way. Maybe they were acquired or management changed or whatever. So that's an area that we've put a lot of investment in, and is part of what we work with Bryce and his team on, is to, at a given point in time, you know, who's the right one to work with. And like on the TPA front, Bryce has got a great TPA he's worked with that wasn't already in this embedded program. They're going through that because they've been endorsed by Bryce and they've got educated on that. So that's kind of how I will address that situation. And then there's a great question around quality. And what's the sort of approach that Faith, Bryce, you use to ensure that, sure, get a fair price, but a fair price on poor care and inappropriate treatment isn't good. So how do you ensure that there is high quality?
Sure. I'll just touch on it from a high level. We do seek, you know, firms that have quality databases, outcome databases. There are a handful out there that have their hands on, you know, CMS quality outcome scores and data. There's, you know, a couple that have some data around commercial carrier outcomes. We pay dollars for that data for our nurses to have real time at their fingertips. We also use a number of other, you know, partners, I guess you could say, that may be in the business of, in a particular, maybe it's orthopedics, maybe it's, you know, transplants. And we try to really follow the best. And so patient safety, you know, publicly, you can look up LeapFrog, but that's a database that's public and we can see hospital safety grades and things. But it's not just one or two, and Faith can attest that if we had more time, but it's, you know, she'll dive into four or five different databases and make sure that everything seems to be aligned. And most of the time, just because I think there may have been a question around it, you know, Faith will give two or three high quality provider options. She doesn't say just one, you know, it's here's two or three, do your own research if you'd like, but from all of my data and research, these two or three providers look great. And then we let the member make their decision.
Faith, anything you want to add on that as you go off mute?
No, Bryce covered it really well. It is a time consuming process. And thankfully employees, I just let them know it's going to take me a little time, a couple, you know, maybe 24 hours to research and dig in, and then I get them options to choose from. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing, that sometimes there's this perception that care isn't shoppable. And obviously if you're in an ambulance and unconscious, that's not the time where you're going to be shopping around for care, but that's a pretty small percentage. I mean, really small percentage, probably less than 10% are, you know, true emergencies. Most of the time there is a moment to take a breath. Obviously there's a lot of, I mean, you enter a hospital, you know, other than maybe, you know, giving birth to a child, it's not a great moment in your life. A lot of anxiety and stress for folks, even more during, you know, COVID times. And there's a question around direct contracts, which I'll address a little bit, and Bryce, you can chime in. And that is, I would state up front that COVID is this real inflection point where there's been a lot of exposure to the failures of our system. There's a lot of providers who are not happy with how things are working on their end, and they're very eager to work. In the case of Pacific Steel that I mentioned earlier, where they went from spending over $8 million to under $3.5 million, in 2 years, they got 5,000 direct contracts. You don't do that, and there are only 750 employees. This is not Walmart or something. You only do that if they're very fair to both sides, very simple contracts. These are two-page contracts, and there are issues on the provider side we can help address. Like, they have a very difficult time in this era of high deductibles collecting patient accounts receivable. I mean, I worked on that side many moons ago, and it wasn't as bad as it is now. And I think now they collect under 10% of patient accounts receivable. And so if you can pay a fair amount, pay them in a timely manner, all but the most intransigent price gouging organizations are quite open to that. And we have organizations that we've been working with in concert with the benefits advisor, where they've got tens of thousands of physicians that are in these direct contracts. So Bryce, maybe add a little color commentary, what's going on there.
Sure, I concur with you fully, Dave. So I'm in between two very large healthcare markets, Cleveland, Ohio, and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And anytime we, you know, if we can get to a leadership person, a C-suite person, a provider group that is competing against these large health systems, and explain to them that our Health Rosetta model, I always educate, you know, Health Rosetta model has us directing patients to high quality. And we found that your group is one. And we would like to, you know, instead of sending patients to the big health system, start steering them your way. And if we can do that, you know, and by the way, we're going to waive the out-of-pocket costs for the employee. So you're not going to be chasing deductibles or coinsurance for those people. You know, are you willing to play in that game? And that has been, Dave, as you said it, keep it simple. It doesn't need to be, you know, 50 pages long. And for most of our groups that we do this with, we are on a reference-based model. So it's X percentage of Medicare. They understand it. Physician groups, actually, it's easy for them. And most of the time, we can get the ball across the finish line.
Great. Well, I want to be mindful of time. We've gone a little over. So Tim and Matt, thank you for being willing to stick around and doing what you're doing. I mean, this is what actually moves the general mindset, right? It's not theory. It's actual real people, real businesses that are relatable, that allows people to see, oh yeah, I can do that. You know, we're sort of like that organization. You know, we're in that region or industry or size or family owned business. So, you know, kudos to you to saying enough is enough and making it happen. And again, thanks to everybody who joined us. You'll get a follow-up email. There are, again, there'll be links to download the book that go into things like change management and centers of excellence and proper primary care and all these sort of things that allow you to take control of this important area. And one of the pieces I liked hearing the most was Tim's comment about how it used to be probably a real burn, a saddle, you know, in these management meetings, and the fact that it's not in the top 10 sort of worry list is great to hear. And there's no reason others can't do the same. So thanks again for doing what you're doing and joining us. And we'll look forward to hearing continued updates in the future. Thanks so much.
All right.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.